Everybody, this is Sam Davies, and you're listening to Carbon Neutral Convos, presented by the John Molson Sustainable Enterprise Committee, a podcast that tries to bridge the gap between sustainability and business and gets down to the pressing issues facing our world today. We enjoy interviews with guests from a variety of industries and discuss how we can improve on climate action and build a blueprint for a sustainable economy. Today, we are joined by Eric Warner, a John Molson alumni and current marketing and communications lead at Taking Root. We hope you enjoy. All right, welcome to the pod, Eric. JSEC is really glad to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so how's this Monday morning treating you? I know you're 3 hours back over in Vancouver.
It's good. We've been, Vancouver's been hit with a lot of sun, and we've been slammed as of today with a week full of rain. So for me, I'm a Vancouverite, so I kind of love the rain, so I'm pretty excited about it. So but yeah, no, Monday's going okay so far.
So kind of back to normal now with all that, right, I guess?
Feels like it. I mean, I was camping on the weekend, so I was tenting in a bunch of rain, which I thoroughly enjoy, unlike, I think, many people. But
it, definitely. Yeah, so let's get started. So I think to get the listeners like familiar with you a bit and sort of what we're trying to get at today, I think we'll sort of talk about your experience at Concordia. So as some of the listeners may know, you were a past JSEC president. So maybe if you just want to sort of talk about like your experience towards sustainability at JMSB, and what was that like, how you found the experience with regards to sustainability at JMSB at the time?
Yeah, for sure. So I started at Concordia in 2015, and for a couple of years was kind of struck by feeling like I wanted to connect with a community that was looking at the intersection between sustainability and business. And I think intersectionality between sustainability and business is almost a dated word. I think it's almost more holistic now in terms of an integration. But I was looking for something where I could just connect with the community. And JSEC was one of those things. I found it was really interesting what JSEC was doing in terms of trying to explore how to better connect sustainability and business, how to demonstrate that to other people who might not be as familiar with it. And so that was one of the avenues that I started to explore. And then the other one was seeing how I could kind of integrate it a little bit more with my curriculum. So I was doing a marketing major. I was doing most of my core comm courses, I think. And I didn't really want to do the rest of my degree with just business classes. And so I started looking around to see how I could complement that. And then I found the sustainability minor out of the Loyola College. And I had previously gone to UBC for a year and, you know, taken a bunch of random classes under a general arts degree. And so those, as I transferred to Concordia, kind of were all my electives. And so choosing to do the sustainability minor meant adding a whole other year onto my degree because I'd already filled my electives credit. So it wasn't like I was using my electives to fill in my sustainability minor. But I felt that it was really worth it to get a better and more rounded degree. So that was kind of where I sort of started getting into everything, was both through this, you know, sustainability curriculum side of things, and then also through JSEC. And sort of as I went throughout my degree, those just continued to open more and more doors. I worked as a coordinator for Waste Not, Want Not for a while, helping them to organize their events to raise awareness for waste education. I also volunteered as a board member for Sustainable Concordia. I also was the board chairperson for a year. And I also worked at the Center for Creative Use, Sucker, for maybe 4 to 8 months, working as the tool library assistant. So yeah, I kind of webbed my way through sustainability at Concordia and had a great time doing it.
No, that's great to hear, especially with regards to how you sort of had a lot of experiences outside of JMSB. At least in my experience, and definitely some of my fellow students can agree, is that sort of like JMSB can sometimes be like isolated from the greater Concordia community. So it's great to see you got involved with sort of like Sustainable Concordia, Soccer. Those are all sort of organizations, if you will, that we're trying here at JSEC to collaborate with, just because we find for the sustainability movement, it's or whatever you want to call it, it's sort of best to get the most reach you can. And sometimes that has to do with stretching beyond JMSB. Like, we are a John Molson committee. We're supposed to target John Molson students, but still, nonetheless, it's great to have those experiences outside of JMSB.
I felt that, like, I asked that same question. I was like, okay, as a you know, CASA subsidiary, as a JMSB body, we are meant to mainly serve JMSB students. But I found that we couldn't fully serve JMSB students without integrating with the wider sustainability ecosystem. So for example, if someone in JMSB wants to get involved in sustainability at Concordia, I mean, they can do that within JMSB, but they also can do that outside of JMSB. But their touch point to that broader ecosystem would, you know, realistically be through JSEC, because it's already confined within JMSB. And so I think that it was a lot of the collaborations that I did were really based around trying to open up people in JMSB to that broader community. Because to your point of, you know, sustainability is not purely a JMSB thing, nor is it purely a non-JMSB thing. It needs to be integrated between all faculties and collaborated on.
That's a great way of looking at it. It's sort of like JSEC is sort of the bridge to the wider sustainability community at Concordia, especially for JMSB students.
For sure.
Yeah. So like, it's definitely something we're doing now. Like, we sort of host like movie nights at the Greenhouse now. So sort of trying to be like, okay, JMSB students, get out of the MB building and come check out the hall building, sort of stuff like that. So it's a really great way of seeing it.
Yeah. The other thing that I realized as I was participating in JSEC is we really started to look at what is JSEC's function, like what are we trying to do, and we came out of that exercise with sort of this three-pronged approach, which is number one, looking at how to make businesses more sustainable, right? And I'll go through these three things, and then I'll kind of go into more detail within each one of them. But then the second one would to be to use business frameworks to make sustainable ideas, to realize sustainable ideas. And then the third piece is to institutionalize sustainability at Concordia. Now, the first two, looking at, okay, well, how do you bring sustainability into business? Well, you might look at existing business operations within any industry. You know, for example, I worked in entertainment in Montreal for a while. And how would you look at making that more sustainable? How would you make a festival more sustainable, for example? Well, you might look at waste, you might look at energy usage, you might look at all these different factors, and then you might, you know, try and work on mitigating negative outcomes, or, you know, improving positive outcomes. And so that was a side of bringing sustainability to business. And then on the flip side of that, there's also things like, you know, advancements in, you know, biomimicry, right? This is like developing wind turbines that are in subtidal areas, but developing them in such a way where they're kind of, I don't know these technical words here, but sort of the base of the wind turbine mimics a coral reef. Now, that's a really cool way of looking at restoration. Now, a business framework, so being able to support that with marketing, finance, accounting, et cetera, is a way of bringing business to accelerate those sustainable ideas. And when we talk about, you know, the need for connecting outside of JMSB, that was something that I found was really where I felt like I was adding a lot of value, is by taking a lot of the business frameworks that I was learning in JMSB and working with organizations outside to be able to present those frameworks to help organize, to help accelerate, et cetera. And similarly, on the opposite side, I felt like I was gaining a lot of knowledge in how to be more sustainable. How could JMSB, how could JSEC be more sustainable? What areas could we look at? And so that, I think, was a really great way to think about sustainability for us at that time. And then the third piece of institutionalizing sustainability, that was really focusing on, okay, well, how do we get more sustainable curriculum in JMSB? What would it take to do that, et cetera, et cetera.
No, I really like that, especially the part about like applying business frameworks to like sustainable endeavors, if you will, right? It's just always, at least in my experience, I always feel like with regards to sustainability in business, almost being imposed upon businesses, right? Sort of sustainability. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like sustainability to business, but why don't we mm-hmm. bring business to sustainability? And I really like that, especially being a business student. It's sort of use what you know to get the results you want, to get the whatever. No, I really like that. I've never really thought of it like that, sort of leveraging what you know to realize sustainable initiatives.
Yeah, it's funny. I think when we think about, you know, making things more sustainable, we always just think about, improving the sustainability of existing processes rather than, oh, actually, this is just a sustainable idea. We need to accelerate that and kind of make it more widespread, right? And I think that that's a really powerful way to apply business. I think it's funny because, you know, it's just a switch of word ordering that often people, when I used to say like, exactly. Oh yeah, we apply sustainability to business and business sustainability, they're like, what? Like, what do you mean by that? But I think it's a really key concept.
No, I definitely agree. Like, I'm almost like dumbfounded, and you're right. It's just a simple flip of the perspective. As far as a marketing major, would you have any examples of that, of how you sort of leverage your marketing experience with regards to, I know you worked at Evenco, was there any opportunities you had there, or just in any sort of experience?
Yeah, so Evenco was pretty, it was very much less involved on the sustainability side. It was much more involved on the, much more on the branding and the music side. Music is a really big passion of mine, and that was something I was pretty passionately exploring. But I think when we look at marketing and if you look at, take a problem as broad as something like climate change is not a science problem. Like, it's not a problem where we don't know what to do. It's a problem where we don't know how to make people change their behaviors. And so when I look at climate change, I look at marketing, I go, okay, well, people use marketing to change attitudes and change behaviors. That's exactly what we've got to do with climate change. Now, this is obviously a really big oversimplification. There's a lot more, including policy, including negotiation, including markets, et cetera. But I think fundamentally at the root, we're looking at a marketing issue. And so for me, that was really exciting to be able to look at that. And again, going back to this, well, how does business accelerate sustainability? Well, for me, it's using all these different marketing frameworks to look at, okay, what's going to inspire you to make that action? Like, what's going to, you know, decomplicate this complexity of climate change, while at the same time staying rigorous enough so that it respects the science? And so that for me was sort of the application of marketing to something like sustainability.
No, I really enjoy that perspective. And it's one I've never really thought about, because like you were saying, with regards to climate change and how we go about tackling this issue, we're always sort of thinking about sort of like the operational side of businesses, or sort of policy, or how do we get all our vehicles to be electric, for example. But it's like, we know how to do that, at least in a broad sense. But yeah, like you're saying, we just need to encourage change in behavior. And I mean, isn't that what marketing is all about to a certain degree? And that's, no, I really enjoy that perspective.
Yeah, I think that is, I mean, even if you're looking at marketing in a non-sustainability context, right, you're, look at, for example, one function of marketing, what might be to generate leads. And that would mean trying to develop content or copy that is going to create interest in a customer, right? you're looking at trying to find someone who could be interested in your product, and you know, trying to deliver them content that is going to incite them to engage with that content, that would then make them easier to retarget by converting them into a sale, right? So you're looking at both an attitude and a behavior in terms of what you're trying to do with them. So like definitely what you're trying to do in marketing is impact attitudes and behaviors. I think sustainability is just a really cool way of looking at that.
Okay, yeah, so that's some really great stuff, especially with regards to, you know, like applying business frameworks and applying marketing in a sort of in a manner of which you achieve sustainable goals. And I know at Taking Root, it's sort of an inherently sustainable company, if you will. So do you have any examples of that or your experience there with regards to marketing at Taking Root?
Yeah, so to give a little bit of context, so Taking Root is focused on forest restoration. So we will do, we enable farmers in the tropics to grow trees. And the way that we finance those activities is through the sale of carbon credits. I can go into a lot more detail about what we do, but for the purpose of the example, I'll kind of leave it at that for now. In terms of the financing mechanism of carbon credits, carbon is extraordinarily complicated. And I'm not even speaking from a pure scientific standpoint, but just from a carbon market standpoint. And to just give a primer on how carbon credits work, in case you know people don't know, essentially every company or individual has an environmental footprint, right? So at the individual level, you could look at this as simply as like when we breathe air, we breathe out CO2. Like we have a somewhat immaterial impact on the environment through breathing, but a more material impact might be through driving, taking a flight, different ways. And from a company perspective, that could happen through a series of ways, depending on what sector you're in. So if you're in, you know, if you're, call it Air Transat, you're creating emissions that through all of your flights. Now, the idea is that, well, the emissions that are going to the atmosphere are far lopsided from the emissions that are being sequestered out of the atmosphere. Right. And in order to regulate that balance, we need to reduce emissions. So take Air Transat, you know, they need to reduce their emissions as low as possible. And then whatever they can't reduce, they should offset by an activity that's either going to reduce emissions elsewhere or sequester carbon elsewhere. For example, so if, and I don't mean to pick on Air Transat, it's just an easy Montreal focused example.
No, definitely.
If Air Transat, you know, they don't have the technology to be able to reduce right away, well, what they can do then is, you know, quantify, well, how many tons of carbon in our footprint are we not able to reduce? And then go, okay, well, then let's offset that footprint by, you know, buying carbon credits from Taking Root. Because what they'll do is that they'll, you know, enable farmers to grow trees, which will sequester the carbon that we can't reduce. And so that's like the fundamental idea of carbon and like how carbon credits work. But the areas where it gets really complicated, and I'm going to try and bring this back into the marketing conversation, is a lot of people question, well, the cost of offsetting is less typically than the cost of abatement or the cost of reducing your emissions. And so therefore, a lot of people rely too much on offsets rather than, you know, reduce their footprint, which needs to be the priority. And this creates a perception problem of offsets in general, especially when it's oversimplified. The other area of offsets that can be challenging is not all offsets are created equal. There are different indicators of quality in a carbon offset project. One of these indicators is called additionality, which is if you hadn't bought the carbon credit, would it have happened anyways? So right now, you know, if you look at 15 years ago, there were carbon credits created around accelerating the transition to renewable energy. And now, as that kind of transition has been accelerated, it's being questioned, like, well, is this still a relevant carbon credit or no? Because financing is happening anyways, and so therefore, do we need to keep crediting renewable energy? And so that's kind of one way that that can work. But what often happens is these kind of messages are distilled into single point criticisms that cause people to discredit the entire offsetting mechanism altogether, when in reality, it's a lot more nuanced than that. Taking root, we approach building carbon projects with a tremendous amount of rigor. And people always say, like, oh, do you think carbon offsets are good or bad? And it's like, well, it's not really a yes or no question. It's you need to look at projects on a case by case basis. And you also need to look at a company's kind of footprint and their targets on a case by case basis. You know, there are some entities that are doing it well, and there are others that aren't doing it well. And I think that as this is a very complicated industry and often gets oversimplified, I think the role of marketing is to be able to really clear through the clutter in a way that is, A, going to make it easier to understand so that people can have can understand what it is, but also be having respect for the kind of the rigor and the detail and the science behind it all. And I think walking that fine line is something that's really tricky. And so that, for me and my job at Taking Root, is a lot of what I do, is trying to take some of these concepts and explain how they work at a level that, you know, most people could understand.
No, for sure. Like, I'm not too familiar with carbon markets myself, but in the research that I've done, it's just a wildly broad industry, and there's a lot of nuances within it with regards to, say, how you measure emissions, how you measure offsets, where the offsets occur relative to where the emissions occur. Because from what I understand, like, say, a company who's has a lot of emissions in, say, whatever, the States, they could buy offsets in another area. So is that fair to the people within the community where the emissions are actually occurring? That's what I understand. So there's sort of issues like that. So I guess from a marketing side, you're sort of trying to distill all these sort of nuances into a general idea about, say, yes, there's definitely some complexity to this, but at the end of the day, there's definitely some good to come out of, like, the offset market, if you will.
I mean, there was a clip, a video clip that came out about a month and a half ago, and it was John Oliver, the late night TV show host, talking about carbon offsets, and it was just being shared everywhere on LinkedIn. Like, anyone who works around carbon was sharing it, because it was really criticizing offsets, but it was oversimplifying a lot of the messaging. And so the risk for someone like Taking Root is, hey, we're growing trees. Like, we're doing this well. we're growing trees in polycultures. We're enabling better livelihoods. We're ensuring that these trees are going to stay in the ground over time. But what this clip does is that it oversimplifies, and then someone watches that and who doesn't know anything about carbon offsets or the nuance or the intricacies go, oh, all offsets are bad. And that's a huge risk for us, because it reduces financing to the overall carbon industry. And so I think the role, again, going back to the role of marketing, it's, well, how do you deal with that? How do you mitigate that risk? How do you better explain that nuance? And it's really hard, but it's also really, it's really interesting. I really enjoy it.
No, definitely. Like, cause yeah, like you're saying, there's levels to what entails an offset. I remember I was watching one video, like, sort of in research for this podcast, and it wasn't necessarily anti-offset, but it's definitely explaining that it's very complex. But they brought up one example of, say, okay, I want to take a flight to wherever, but I want to offset this flight. So here's this website where you could offset it, right? But one of the offsets, I think it was something along the lines of, It was a garbage patch, I think, in New Brunswick. This person's from, like, whatever, LA. And it was a garbage patch in New Brunswick that was, like, being set aflame or something. And in some way, that was an offset. I could forget exactly what it entailed, but, like, it definitely wasn't what Taking Root is doing. Like you're saying, Taking Root is taking plain land and putting trees on it where they should be. And actually, like, a real... real carbon sequestering is happening with Taking Root. And I never really thought of that being sort of bundled in the broader offset community, whereas, you know, there's levels to it and you're one of, I mean, the good ones, if you will. But yeah, so I guess marketing is just sort of trying to come on the other side of that and be like, hey, look at us, I guess.
I think that the challenge that a lot of people forget about carbon markets is that they're a really young industry. Like, the first ever carbon credit was issued 25 years ago this year. And for a long time, that just sort of, you know, that went along. You had some early adopters, but that early adopter process was over the course of like 20 years. And then around 2018, 2019, everything just blew up. Like, all of a sudden, carbon was hot. Like, everybody wanted in on it. And, you know, the sort of in the 21st formative years, like, not a lot of movement or developments were really occurring. And so now we're seeing in the past 5 years, a lot of exposure on carbon credits going, oh, we need to fix this. We've got to fix that. We've got to fix this. We've got to fix that, which is great. But it's still in a really early stage from a development standpoint. So there's a lot of... there's a lot of clumsiness and there's a lot of trying to figure out, okay, well, how do we do this? How do we simplify this? How do we make sure that no bad projects make it to the market? How do we make sure that no bad companies are, you know, reporting in the wrong way? You know, exploring things like that. But I think that the nascency of it all is something that people really don't think a lot about. If you compare it to any other industry that, you know, made a ton of mistakes in its earlier years. And just to kind of illustrate that growth, you know, as of, like, I think it was 2019, there were four times as many companies that had net zero targets than the first 20 years of the carbon market combined. Like, that's an incredible rate of growth. And the reason why that's such an indicator is because, well, if you have more companies setting net zero targets, it means you have more companies buying carbon credits. And so that to me was just a crazy stat that I was like, oh, wow, like, over 20 years, in one single year after that, you get four times the cumulative amount of companies with net zero targets. It blew my mind.
No, for sure. And I think now, like, the question I'm sort of thinking about or getting at is sort of whose responsibility is it? And then this is with regards to the governments, those emitting and those creating the offsets market, if you will. So whose responsibility do you think it is to sort of calm down the questions people may have with regard to offsets and how... not sure what I want to say, but how we sort of say there's a necessity for this and, like, we need to get past sort of the stigma around it. So whose sort of, in general terms, responsibility is it to distill that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think it's kind of everyone's that's working. I mean, you know, going back to this John Oliver clip, everybody from, you know, a carbon certification standard to a carbon reseller to a project developer, everybody was offering their own version of a rebuttal of those clips. I don't know that it necessarily rests on one entity's hands. I work in the voluntary carbon market, which is, you know, corporates and individuals going net zero or carbon neutral or buying credits by their own volition, versus governments are more in compliance market, where it's the law where you have to reduce and mitigate your footprint. And so I actually don't know what government's role is in sort of the communication or the marketing side of things. But I do think that as far as the voluntary carbon markets goes, it's just sort of all the players that has a responsibility. And I think it's just that responsibility comes through making sure that the information is really accessible. One of the things that I did when I, within the first year that I joined Taking Root, is created this document of frequently asked questions, where people could, or partners specifically, could kind of look at, all right, what are the questions that people might sort of criticize this of, like, how does Taking Root deal with additionality? How does Taking Root know that the trees planted are going to be trees grown, et cetera, et cetera? And this FAQ document ended up being, we just did the second version of it, and it's 24 pages. Like, it's really extensive because there's a lot of detail in it. But I think that that's an asset that can be used and, you know, and shared to make it easier to communicate. So I don't know that it's the responsibility of any one entity. As far as it pertains to this problem specifically, I think that there are other problems that, you know, carbon buyers have responsibilities for versus project developers have responsibility for. But I think when it comes to communicating carbon markets and carbon credits in general, I think it's kind of everyone.
Right. And I think that could be said for the greater environmental movement in general, right? It's sort of, that's sort of what it always comes down to when we sort of having these conversations about how it can be more green. It's like, it comes at every level. It comes at the individual level. It comes at the organizational level. And I think that's, yeah. So to ask that question, I think it's sort of like, we always know the answer, but then the next question is how. So it's like, how do we get everybody to change? And that sort of, I think, well, with many people exactly within the environment. Yeah.
I heard a story about, there was a Republican politician in the States who was becoming increasingly dissatisfied at the association of environmentalism as a left-wing policy or as a left-wing set of values. And what he was saying is, you know, people don't often know this, but one of the presidents that actually did the most for the environment in terms of setting up agencies, et cetera, was Richard Nixon. And, you know, not to get into an analysis of, was Richard Nixon a good president or bad, but the point is that he was a Republican who was pushing for environmentalism. And so now what this Republican politician is doing is trying to create a movement to reconnect Republicans to the environment, because it's not a left-right issue. It's just a, you know, connecting to sustainability issue. And so that to me is a great example of a marketing issue, right? It's a gap where maybe a lot of people on the right wing are looking at sustainability or the environment as a left-wing issue. And it's, okay, you got to go, how do we fix this gap? And that's a communications challenge. And so that I thought was a great example of, you know, figuring out how do we solve that. So I think, to your point on, it doesn't just go for carbon markets, it goes for anything. It goes for how we value the environment. It goes for how we think about climate change or ESG or plastics and waste, et cetera. I think it's really, really important for any field.
No, for sure. Like, the complexity of this issue and the way sustainability gets spoken about with regards to politics or in business always sort of gets blown in a direction that sort of leads to nowhere. And I mean, mm-hmm. at least in my life, you know, it's sort of always been one of the top four issues in any election is one side's taking the greener side of things and the other side's not. And it's really not such an issue. It's mm-hmm. The science is there, everything is there. And mm-hmm. I think it's, and like you're saying, it just comes down to how can we distill this to everyone in a way that's digestible for everyone to understand and for them to associate mm-hmm. it with their, I say with their values, if you will. It's like, I mean, I don't think, no, you can't say broadly that Republicans want the planet to disintegrate in the next whatever 100 years. You know, it's not like that. So,
right,
a great complexity to it, and like yeah. you're saying, it sort of comes down to sort of a level of it comes down to sort of a marketing side and to sort of to explain to everyone, saying like this has to do with all of us. All right, so now for our rapid fire round, we'll start off with our this or that questions for Eric. So let's get going. All right, so Eric, music or podcasts?
Music.
TV series or movies?
TV series.
Working as a team or alone?
Both.
All right, pancakes or waffles?
Pancakes.
All right. Paperback or ebook?
Paperback.
All right. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Would you rather go into the future or go into the past?
Go into the past.
All right. Work from home or the office?
office.
Okay, yeah. When I've asked that question, I've gotten sort of like a both or hybrid. That seems to be the sort of consensus. It sums everyone. All right, so now we'll go on to our fill-in-the-blank question. So, you know, I'll say a sentence and sort of first word or first sort of thing that comes to mind. Sustainability is?
Purpose-driven.
The best source to learn about more topics is?
Everywhere.
Awesome. Concordia is
a really non-informative answer.
Go ahead. These questions are sort of meant to sort of leave you stumped, and we get some great answers, and yeah, saying everywhere is definitely a great answer too. There's opportunity everywhere. All right, so Concordia is
a university.
All right, so university is for
learning.
Awesome. The best place to study on campus is?
Greenhouse.
Awesome. My professional experiences have made me blank.
Have made me want to keep learning.
Awesome. I think that'll do it for our rapid fire round. I really enjoyed all those answers. Definitely. We try to make it. It's still a work in progress with the team. We're all trying to collaborate with a few questions, but most of those questions I've asked before in prior podcasts, and I see that it sort of leaves a pause in the response. So I enjoy using the same ones. Awesome. And yeah, with that being said, it also does it for the entirety of this podcast. I myself really enjoyed it. I really learned a lot and have a new appreciation for marketing. And I hope you enjoyed it too, Eric.
Yeah, it's been great being on, and thanks, Sam, for inviting me. And best of luck to JTech this year.